Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded changemakers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, I talked about resetting our individual selves in order to bring about the great reset that can make this world a better place. I said the personal resetting is the journey of becoming unifwithable, becoming an increasingly better, happier version of yourself. As with any journey, you have a starting place and a desired destination. But if you don't know where you're starting from, it's really difficult to know how to reach that destination. In this episode, I'm sharing a way to help you better understand the starting point of your journey of resetting, the place where you're at in the present moment, which is the culmination of all that has gone before in your life. I love how Maya Angelou explains it. She said, "I have great respect for the past. If you don't know where you've come from, you don't know where you're going. I have respect for the past, but I'm a person of the moment. I'm here, and I do my best to be completely centered at the place I'm at. Then I go forward to the next place." End of quote. So in order to move forward to the next place in your journey, in this talk, we're going to take the first step in getting completely centered at the place you're at, so that you enable yourself to go forward to the next place. And this centering is about discovering where you are on a multitude of continuums. In a bit, I'll offer you an exercise to help with this discovery work. As I'm apt to do, however, to explain what I'm talking about, I'm going to first share a little bit about me. In this case, about me getting centered at the place I'm at. Centered is the key word here, but in my intro story, I'm about to share, that word initially holds a meaning different from how Maya Angelou was using it, i.e. meaning being mentally and emotionally confident, focused, and well-balanced. In my story, centered at first means in the middle, and it's about how I moved from that unhappy middle place towards a more centered place in Maya's sense of the word. I begin with a line sung by Jerry Rafferty of Steeler's Wheel. "Here I am, stuck in the middle with you." For many years, I felt horribly stuck in the middle, a place of not enoughness, not good enough, popular enough, attractive enough, smart enough. I was born in the middle third of nine kids. As a kid, I perceived my older sisters as the three big girls, being the oldest third of my siblings, my three younger sisters as the three little girls, being the youngest third, and me and my two brothers as being the middle third. Actually, being in the middle of the family birth order has never really bothered me. And neither has the fact that I was born in the middle of the month, in the middle of the decade, in the middle of the century, admittedly not the middle month. It's all the other middle stuff that for years wreaked havoc on my self-confidence and self-esteem and fueled my not enoughness, or at least that's what I thought for a long time. I've come to understand that it was actually my lack of self-confidence, low self-esteem, and belief of not enoughness that made me feel stuck in the middle. Some examples of my perceived middle stuckness are, from elementary school through university, my grades were always good, but never outstanding. In the workplace, I peaked at middle management, falling short of senior management. As a volunteer, I was good, nominated for awards, but never received them. I've always enjoyed public speaking and writing, but never got beyond placing second or third in local competitions way back when I was still in a small pond. I'm an environmental advocate, neither a pacifist nor activist. I'm a promoter of personal wellness to save the world, but not remotely close to being a personal development influencer like, say, Brené Brown. And on I could go whining about walking through life in the middle of the road. As George P. Schultz said, "One who walks in the middle of the road gets hit from both sides." For way too many years, I was getting hit hard on one side with the belief that I'm nothing special as a person, and just as hard on the other side with the belief that I'm never going to accomplish anything of note. In today's lingo, that might be the equivalent of saying I'm never going to go viral. Thankfully, courtesy of the school of life, together with my deliberate personal development work, I eventually woke up to the realization I would stop getting hit if I ditched those beliefs. I've come to appreciate being in the middle isn't really the loathsome, sticky place I so long thought it to be. In fact, as I now know, it doesn't even really exist, other than being an ego construct of our self-torment. If you notice in my bullet list of evidence of me being a middler, All my qualifications require comparison of myself to others. There were always higher and lower student achievers, more and less dedicated volunteers, first and fourth place speaking competition winners, greater and lesser impassioned environmentalists, non-influencers, and highly impactful influencers. When I came to appreciate that my life story is, I am, unique, being a hugely complex combination of my DNA, my circumstances, my personality, my values, my decisions, I was able to see the absurdity of comparing and positioning myself relative to any other unique person. As Zen Xin said, a flower does not think of competing with the flower next to it. It just blooms. That clarity is what enabled me to discard the self-sabotaging beliefs I held, to stop feeding my ego that had an insatiable craving to be better than others, to do away with the middler complex. I've decided I'll just bloom in my own way. Whether 2 or 200,000 people happen to see my bloom has no bearing on how uniquely beautiful it is. End of my story. To date. Having shared the moral in my personal story that comparison with others is meaningless at best and self-sabotaging at worst, there are times and places where comparison with others is appropriate, healthy, and often rewarding. It's in the form of competition in sports, in spelling bees, in job hunting, on reality cooking shows, in running marathons, etc. It's also appropriate to compare with others for the sake of emulating qualities you admire in the other or discarding undesirable traits you see reflected in others. But when it comes to your self-worth, your value as a human being, the only healthful, helpful comparison is the current version of yourself to a past version of yourself and a future desired version of yourself. That enables you to view yourself on the continuum of life. With regard to comparison to the former you, that must only be made to take stock of, to acknowledge and celebrate how far you've come along the personal development continuum towards actualizing the you were born to be. The comparison must never involve shame over the you once were. If shame, disgust, or regret arises from looking back at the former you, it's so, so important to discard judgment by reminding yourself that you believed, thought, and behaved in ways the then you deemed best, based on the wisdom you had at your disposal at that time. You did the best you could with what you had, however ill-advised it may seem in hindsight. And if you're comparing your current self to your desired future self, and are perhaps again feeling shame or disappointment about your now self, I say, patience, my dear. If you are open to self-discovery and self-development work, shame and disappointment will be replaced with acceptance of where you're presently at and excited anticipation of where you'll go. If you are struggling at times with appreciating your current self as a beautiful, incomparable, unique person who is anything but middling, or if you want to gain clarity about who you are in the present moment, the exercise I'm going to share here about visualizing yourself on a continuum, multiple continuums, more accurately, may be helpful. There's nothing scientific about this exercise. Its purpose is simply for you to provide yourself with an enlightening, empowering visual of your one-of-a-kind present personality to help you get centered, i.e. be mentally and emotionally confident, focused, and well-balanced, as well as self-accepting of the version of you are right now. When you have that centeredness and self-acceptance, then you're able to journey onwards towards an even higher, happier, healthier version of you. It's important to remember that the journey is not about changing who you are. It's about enabling who you truly are by getting rid of the inauthentic, inherited, toxic bits. I call this the personality in a picture exercise. You can simply listen as I talk through it, or if you want to benefit most effectively from it, I suggest you also do the exercise while listening to the archived version of this episode at cfru.ca, so you can pause as required and move at a pace that suits you. As this exercise requires a chart, you'll need a pen or pencil and a sheet of lined paper, not smaller than 8x10. Alternatively, you could pre-print a chart with 36 rows and 6 columns. At the top of the left-hand-most column in the first row, write the heading, Personality Trait. This column will consist of a list of commonly recognized personality traits, one per line, which I'll describe shortly. In the top row of the next column, write the heading, "Not at all." The next three columns will be headed with the numbers 2, 3, and 4, respectively, from left to right. In the top row of the last right-handmost column, write the header completely. As you might be surmising, the exercise will consist of you marking an X in one of the five columns from not at all to completely for each of the listed personality traits to best indicate how you see that personality trait applying to you. For example, for the orderliness trait, I'd mark my X in the column titled 3 because I'm about halfway between being not at all orderly and completely orderly. For another trait, I may indicate me as completely embodying it by marking an X in the right-handmost column. When you finish the exercise, you'll have a sheet of paper with an X in each row beside each personality trait, somewhere from not at all to completely, based on your self-assessment. That collection of X's gives you a visual of where you're presently at on the continuums of the most common personality traits. To make the visual even more impactful, I suggest you take a colored marker, pen or pencil, using a color that you feel best represents your personality, and draw a line to connect all your X's. That colored line is a snapshot picture of your current personality. No one else will have exactly the same picture. Just for the fun of it, when I did the exercise, I asked myself if my personality picture, i.e. my crooked line of joined up X's, reminded me of anything. And it did. To my mind's eye, my personality picture looks like an irregular coastline. And I love that my imagination took me there because I find meaning in that dynamic, ever-changing zone between land and water. It reminds me, too, that personality is not fixed. It is fluid. And with self-awareness and self-development work, you can change where you mark your X's. As I said earlier, this doesn't mean changing who you are at your core. It means enabling your real, authentic self to manifest by getting rid of what's not really you. If there's anything about the picture of your personality that doesn't sit well with you, know you have the ability to change it. So about those personality traits you'll be listing in the left-hand column of your sheet of paper. In the field of psychology, there are the big five personality traits, sometimes known as the five-factor model of personality or OCEAN model. OCEAN being the acronym for the grouping of five unique characteristics used to study personality, namely O for openness, C for conscientiousness, E for extroversion, A for agreeableness, and N for neuroticism. Within these big five groups, there are subtraits, six of which will be listed for each grouping. So your left-hand column on your sheet of paper will have the big group names and six subtraits for each trait listed. These subtraits I obtained from 123test.com. I'll describe the continuum for each of the big five personality groups and then give you the subtraits for each to list on your sheet. Beginning with openness. This refers to the extent to which you have an appreciation and willingness for new ideas and experiences. Somewhere on the continuum from being inventive and curious to being consistent and cautious. Enter into your chart the trait openness in the first column and list the following subtraits beneath it in the next six rows. Imaginativeness, artistic interests, emotional reactivity to stimulus, adventurousness, intellectualness, and liberalism. Now, with reasonable consideration, don't be impulsive and don't overthink it. For each of the subtraits, position your X on the chart in the column that most accurately describes to what extent you presently embody it. This is the process you'll repeat for the remaining four personality traits. The next grouping is conscientiousness, referring to what extent you control, regulate, and direct your impulses, to what extent you want to do what is right, especially regarding work or duty. On the continuum being from being efficient and organized to being extravagant and careless. Enter into your chart the trait conscientiousness and the following subtraits beneath it and indicate with the positioning of your X to what extent you embody the following subtraits. Self-efficacy, meaning abilityness to complete a task or achieve a goal. Orderliness, dutifulness, achievement striving. Self-discipline, cautiousness. The third grouping is extroversion, which refers to the extent to which you tend to prefer being sociable, outgoing, and talkative, on the continuum from being outgoing and energetic to being solitary and reserved. Enter into your chart the trait extroversion and the following subtraits beneath it, and indicate with the positioning of your X to what extent you embody the following subtraits: friendliness, gregariousness, assertiveness, activity level, excitement seeking, cheerfulness. The fourth grouping, agreeableness, refers to what extent you tend to be kind, sympathetic, and helpful to others, on the continuum from being friendly and compassionate to being critical and judgmental. Enter into your chart the trait agreeableness and the following subtraits beneath it, and indicate with the positioning of your X to what extent you embody each of the following subtraits: trust, morality, altruism, cooperation, modesty, sympathy. The final grouping, neuroticism, refers to your ability to remain stable and balanced, or the extent to which you're inclined to worry or be temperamental, on the continuum from being sensitive and nervous to being resilient and confident. Enter into your chart the trait neuroticism and the following subtraits beneath it, and indicate the positioning of your X to what extent you embody the following subtraits: anxiety, anger, depression, self-consciousness, immoderation, vulnerability. And that's it for the exercise of obtaining a visual of where you are presently on the various personality continuums. It's a snapshot, as I said, to help you feel centered and self-accepting of where you're at in the here and now. And your personality picture will most assuredly evolve as you advance along your life continuum towards the person you were born to be. Over years, decades really, of my own personal growth, I've certainly noticed some significant shifting on a number of traits like adventurousness, assertiveness, cooperation, self-consciousness, vulnerability, to name a few. Maybe consideration of these personality traits will help clarify in what areas you want to intentionally make a shift, make a move along a continuum. Maybe it's given you pause to ask yourself, are these personality traits genuinely mine, i.e. inherited through DNA, or have I been imitating them from role models and they're not actually a good fit for the real me? Scientists estimate that 20 to 60% of temperament, or personality, is determined by genetics or nature. So that leaves a big percentage, 40 to 80%, attributable to nurture, i.e. due to the things we were taught or copied from role models and peers. As youth, we weren't responsible for what happened to us, but as adults, we're entirely responsible for fixing it if we want to live authentically, fully, purposefully, and happily. Doing, or at least hearing about this little personality in a picture exercise, can be part of the first step in personal resetting I talked about at the beginning of this episode, i.e. getting completely centered at the place you're at so that you enable yourself to go forward to the next place. Over a span of about seven episodes on Better Me, Better World, I spoke in detail about the process of the BU journey of becoming un-F-withable, what I've also called personal resetting in this and the previous episode. No matter what it's called, the self-discovery, self-development process contains certain essential steps. Better understanding of your place on the various personality continuums supports steps 1, 2, and 3 in the BU journey. The 7 steps of the journey are: number 1, you gain awareness of a change you want in your life, in who you are showing up as. Number 2, you unjudgmentally accept the person you are in the present moment, knowing you're the perfectly imperfect product of all that's come before in your life. Number 3, you begin practicing the traits you want to manifest, acting as if you already are what you want to be, even when you still believe otherwise. Step 4, to achieve sustained motivation and passion to bring about the changes you want to see, you create alignment of your being with your core values, which leads you to discover meaning and purpose. Step 5, you let go of self-saboteurs, the beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors that are keeping you stuck and small and sick. Number 6, You change course on the BU journey as often as required, meaning you're flexible and open-minded. And the final step 7, you continuously celebrate the wins, the changes you've made, the you are becoming. And you do this journey continuously, lifelong, on a loop, or rather a spiral. You go through the steps from 1 to 7 and then go back to 1 again, but each time you return to 1 at a higher level. It's a higher version of you that returns to step 1 each time. This is why it's a journey without end, and a journey from which you can never return to the version of you that began it. So this personality in a picture exercise can have value every time you return to step 1. But there's another very good reason for understanding that you, I, and everyone else live on a multitude of continuums, and every person's place on each of the continuums is determined by everything that's gone before in their life. The DNA they inherited, the nurturing they received, their life circumstances, the decisions they made. All aspects of our life and being are on continuums, not just our personality traits. Our skin color, our physical wellness, our financial well-being, our religiosity, our intelligence, our political leaning, etc. With this understanding and appreciation, there should be no black and white thinking, no us versus them thinking, no discrimination, no polarization. Yes, indeed, there are theoretically 2 poles to every continuum, but as defined by the Oxford Dictionary, a continuum is a continuous sequence in which adjacent elements are not perceptibly different from each other, although the extremes are quite distinct. As adjacent elements on a continuum are not perceptibly different from each other, how do we pinpoint exactly where on the continuum discrimination should begin, based, for example, on skin color? Where does white skin end and brown skin begin? Where does brown skin end and black skin begin? To this point, Alex Tyson said, "The idea that humanity is divided into these separate and distinct and disparate groups with clear boundaries has been disproven by science a long time ago, decades ago. Humanity really is more of a continuum, and that people belong on the same continuum, and that there are no clear breaks between these so-called races." End of quote. Regarding politics, at what points on the continuum does left wing end and moderate begins, and moderate ends and right wing begins? Speaking of gender, says Nicholas Kristof, much of society clings to a view that gender is completely binary, when in fact there's overwhelming evidence of a continuum. And I like what Dan Brown has to say about faith. I quote, "Faith is a continuum, and we each fall on that line where we may. By attempting to rigidly classify ethereal concepts like faith, we end up debating semantics to the point where we entirely miss the obvious. That is, that we are all trying to decipher life's big mysteries and we're each following our own paths of enlightenment." End of quote. Where does us end and them begin? I think it may be very challenging to get consensus on those points on the continuums. Despite the fact that everything in life is on continuums, where differences happen only infinitely gradually, for expediency, we humans have created measures by which to intentionally discriminate. For example, a home buyer needs to meet a certain financial measure to qualify for financing. But how financially different really is the person who just qualifies from the person who misses by, say, $1,000? How different in aptitude is the person who just qualifies for university admission from the person who misses by a point or so? And how much more athletically capable is the person who just qualifies for the Olympics from the person who missed qualifying by a fraction of a second? I suggest it'd be a much better world if we humans stopped ourselves in the act of judgment by reminding ourselves that that person subject to our scrutiny exists on all the very same continuums as do we, albeit at different positions on the continuums for a multitude of differing nature and nurture reasons. I also suggest it'd be a much better world if each and every one of us took stock of where we're positioned on the most important continuum of all, the self-love continuum. Where we're positioned on the continuum from not at all loving ourselves to completely loving ourselves determines our ability to find meaning, purpose, and happiness and help make this a better world. The great personal reset hinges on us loving ourselves so fiercely, because that's how the personal reset can instigate a great global reset. Rudy Francisco said, perhaps we should love ourselves so fiercely that when others see us, they know exactly how it should be done. Unfortunately, I believe there is misunderstanding about the concept of self-love, i.e. that it's a self-serving, self-centered, narcissistic, even in contradiction to the Christian Bible. I find that last bit confounding when the ubiquitous golden rule challenges us to love others as we love ourselves. As our time is up, I invite you to tune in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World for a talk on the nature and importance of self-love. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.